This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
He threw it in the front of the net. Oh, it was there for Scheifele. Knocked away by McNabb. And the Vegas Golden Knights will move on to the Stanley Cup Championship as they defeat the Winnipeg Jets 2-1 to take the series 4-1. And the Winnipeg Jets' terrific season will come to an end.
Dennis Bayak with the call from last Sunday afternoon's Game 5 between the Jets and the Golden Knights. As you well know, the Golden Knights win that contest, win the series 4-1, ending the Winnipeg Jets' season in the Western Conference Final, sending the Jets to the golf course for the remainder of the summer. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside my colleague, Dave Minuke, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Ezra Ginsberg away from the show this morning. Maybe some news on that front later on in the show. We'll see how things develop on that front. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. You can reach us here in studio as well. Send your text to 129090. Standard message rates do apply. We want to hear from you via text. We want to hear from you via Twitter. Whatever's on your mind with regard to the Winnipeg Jets, if you send us a comment, if it's a good enough comment, we may even read it on air and give you your props. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com. Without further ado, I say good morning to my colleague, Dave Minuke. David, nice to see you on this Saturday morning.
Thank you, Drew. Good to be here.
That's good. I'm glad that you are excited to be here, because it'd be a real long 3 hours if you were miserable, I got to tell you.
No, I'm in a good mood.
That's good. Dave in a good mood, always like that. Anyways, David, like we started off the show with the clip of Dennis Bayak with the call there, the final call from last Sunday's game. Obviously, the Western Conference final ends in a disappointing fashion. This is your first opportunity on air since the series ended, as you and I were on, of course, midweek, the final midweek show of the season. So the disappointment, it was real, I suppose. Certainly, people thought the Jets very easily could have advanced to the Stanley Cup final. It was not meant to be. But all in all, a successful year, because if you had said at the beginning of October 2017 that the Winnipeg Jets would advance all the way to the Western Conference final this season, most fans, the team, the organization would say that's a pretty good achievement for a team that hasn't even won a playoff game since returning to Winnipeg prior to this season.
Yeah, and according to Captain Blake Wheeler, he would have given you a big kiss, because there was no anticipation. Again, their goal was playoffs, not necessarily making it to and winning the Stanley Cup. Of course, once I think they started going and the juggernaut started to push forward, I think they started to believe that this team had what it took. I mean, it goes to show you what prognostication is worth, because if I recall correctly, you and I both had Vegas in the Jets in six.
Yeah.
And I mean, as he was right, he had a team in five.
Yeah,
the wrong team in five.
Yeah.
So, no, you know what? I thought it was an excellent season overall. And the reality was, and while, you know, there's no set course that a team has to follow, it's very rare for a team with as little playoff experience as the Jets have as a collective group. And even like Blake Wheeler, it's ironic, right? Blake Wheeler's a veteran guy, but in terms of playoff experience, it's fairly, you know, bleak in terms of, or minimal, I should say, not bleak, but minimal in terms of how much he's actually had, and which is something he talked about in his end of season interview. So from my perspective, really, you see it a lot with these young teams, and Connor Hellebuck described them as wanting to form a dynasty. Mm-hmm. You know, when you think about the Chicago Blackhawks before they won the Stanley Cup, getting knocked out, you know, I think was it by Detroit?
Detroit, I believe, in 5 games in the Western Conference final,
right,
as well.
So, and it's interesting. I mean, I think you have to go through something like this. And my philosophy all along was, okay, this is a very good, you know, trial run for the Jets, but, you know, at what point is it going to come to an end? And then once they got past Nashville, I thought, well, you know, so much for that thought process, because really my thought was, well, they'll have to go through this, you know, have some disappointment at some point. And like the vast majority of us, I believe most of us thought it would be against Nashville. And then they would get that, you know, opportunity next year to kind of rise to the next level, potentially be a Stanley Cup champion, or at least make it to Stanley Cup finals.
Sure.
And, you know, look, they progressed even farther than I anticipated that they would. And I think from a team perspective, I think for even if you didn't have individual success, like Nikolaj Ehlers not scoring a goal, Kyle Connor, like all these guys gained so much in terms of their overall, just the learning experience for what these playoffs are going to have to be like.
Sure. Well, it's the famous story of Wayne Gretzky, you know, when the Oilers lost their first cup final to the Islanders, mm-hmm. and Gretzky walking past the Islanders dressing room and thinking he'd be walking past this massive celebration and, you know, the huge party. And they were all, the Islanders were all so drained from the, from just winning the cup and getting to that point in time that they could barely celebrate in the immediacy of the moment because they were so tired and so exhausted. And that, you know, proved to, or showed Gretzky, it, you know, how much you have to give just to get to this point in time. Not saying the Jets, you know, didn't already know that, of course, but, you know, it is such a draining experience to get to the Stanley Cup, to win the Stanley Cup, to get to the conference final, that, you know, it is all part of a learning process. I mean, if Wayne Gretzky says it, it's good enough for me as well.
Well, yeah, and you know, it's interesting because you see from an older player's perspective versus a younger player's perspective. You know, mm-hmm. Matthew Perreault was completely gutted. You could just see after, he just looked bewildered after the game, and you could just see how drained he was. And you saw it from the players on the ice afterwards. They were taking a knee because they knew their season was over, and they had tried so hard to get the equalizer. And, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury was, you know, as we've talked about, was next worldly in the entire playoffs so far. But again, you could just see, like, Matthew Perreault talked about it earlier in the playoffs about how hard it is to achieve what they've done to be as close as to, you know, potentially being a Stanley Cup champion as this team could have in theory have been.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something that's necessarily going to happen every year, right? The Oilers learned that lesson where you think, okay, now we've made it. We're going to just do this on repeat until we eventually either do something significant or at least we're going to be hitting a fairly high level. Now, I suspect that the Jets are built for a long-term run.
Right.
But you just see how you just can't take it for granted because you never know. And look, there's all these other teams that are going to be thinking, look, they have just as good a chance next year as the Jets will. So I think it was a valuable learning experience. But again, like that's, you know, it's a little solace considering how much effort these guys put into the year and then they have to go home empty handed.
Absolutely. So my question to you, Dave, is, I mean, Western Conference Final, very impressive, you know, for a team, as we said, never won a playoff game prior to this playoff run. How does this impact expectations for next year? So this year, the expectations were make the Stanley Cup playoffs, because that's what they talked about at the beginning of the year. Blake Wheeler said it's playoffs or bust. Well, is it now Stanley Cup or bust for this team? Is it now Stanley Cup final, Western Conference championship or bust for this team, given the performance they've had this year? How does this team respond next year, knowing that you now have expectations and you now have the word favorite or, you know, upper echelon attached to your burden going forward?
The reality is I don't know that they're going to handle it any different, because the truth is that whether this team won or lost, they handled it the same way. And that really started with Blake Wheeler. I mean, again, what these guys do internally in private, we don't see, so we can't speak to that. But when I've gone into the dressing room, whether the Jets have won or lost, you really couldn't tell what it was. And I went in after every game, right? And so from my perspective, they just tried to maintain an even keel and not allow themselves to get too high over a win and too low over a loss. And that really seemed to go throughout the regular season and into the playoffs. And so I really think, I mean, first of all, it's very hard to future cast because there's a whole host of things that need to go right and could potentially go wrong.
Sure.
You know, I mean, in terms of health, look at this Jets team. I mean, think about how rare it is for a team to be getting healthy in the playoffs as opposed to the opposite, which mm-hmm. is what we're more used to.
Losing key players, right? You know, like the Predators last year with Ryan Johansson,
yeah,
for example.
Exactly. So, yeah, exactly. So the Jets had a lot of things go right for them from that perspective. I mean, they obviously had their health concerns throughout the year.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm just saying that. So it's very hard to future cast. In terms of what the expectations are, yeah, I think it absolutely they have to. They don't have to, but the expectations are going to be that this is a team that's going to compete for the Stanley Cup.
Well,
so to me, it's like, you know, do you have to win the Stanley Cup? No, you don't have to, because, you know, it's too simplistic to say, well, they have to win the Stanley Cup. Well, every team wants to win the Stanley Cup, and there's probably five or six other teams that, you know, Tampa Bay Lightning, who, it's actually interesting, you know, if you watch the Tampa Bay responses in the postgame interviews.
After they lost in game
seven.
Yeah,
it was very similar to what we heard from the Jets. And like listening to Stamkos talk, it felt like I was in the Jets room. You just closed your eyes, different team, but, you know, same sort of talk about how they were just kind of gutted and they you know, thought that they were going to be able to push through to that next level. Mm-hmm. And you run into a goal. You know, look, Holtby played pretty well. And the offense
dried up. Sounds familiar. Yeah, I mean, the Jets' offense dried up against Vegas. The Lightning didn't score a goal in games six and seven.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So from my perspective, you can't suggest that they're going to do X, because the reality is there's a whole host of things that have to go right and wrong, or could potentially go wrong, that can run into that. But at the same time, in terms of expectations, I don't think it's unrealistic to think that this is a team, especially based on what we see from these young players who are continuing to take the next step. Jack Roslovic's, obviously, Kyle Connor.
Mm-hmm. Patrick Laine,
Nikolaj Ehlers. So all these guys have another year, you know, and I suspect if Patrick Laine's training is a little different next summer, he comes in because he really seemed to gain his form more towards the mid, late part of the season. Mm-hmm. If he comes in, does a few things different, and he's in better form to start the year, I'm just saying, like, they have a lot of potential in the roster still. So there's a lot of hope for Jets fans. I just think it's just very hard to nail down and give a specific based on, you know, we're still a ways away.
Is this team better conditioned or better equipped to handle the ups and downs potentially of another season than, say, the Oilers were this year? I mean, the Oilers, remember, at the back in October, when everyone was doing their season previews, the Oilers were a lot of people's pick for Stanley Cup champion. We know how disastrous of a year it was in Edmonton. Is this Jets team built better than the Oilers team were, and thus a downturn like the Oilers experience would be quite surprising given the way the Jets roster is formulated?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the depth is clearly there for Winnipeg. I mean, they've got guys on the moose they can call up. Mm-hmm. They've got the team, it overall has great depth. So, but again, like I said, you know, Connor Hellebuyck was next worldly. If something happens to Connor Hellebuyck, what are you going to do? And, you know, Steve Mason talked about how this was the worst season he's had from a health perspective. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe he bounces back and he plays really well, but, you know, history has shown that might be tough for him. And is Eric Comrie ready to take that next step if he potentially gets called upon? So, I mean, again, like I said, there's a number of factors you have to take into consideration. But provided that this team chugs along the way they have, yeah, no, there's no. I think that this team is absolutely built. This isn't a team that's about to take a step back, would be my impression. This is a team that's, again, I really think, while it's not great from the media perspective when you're talking to these guys and they're not whooping it up after a win because, you know, it makes for better audio, it makes for better quotes. The reality is, I think it was a good perspective to have because, as you said to open this, Drew, the reality is these guys hadn't won a playoff game before coming into the season.
But the expectation now, given the way the season went, given the way the playoffs went, is that winning isn't a surprise anymore. Winning is now almost what they expect to do. And, you know, to your point about sort of how even keel they were throughout the course of the season, no highs, no lows. It's a very workmanlike attitude for a team that has had success for the first time ever this year.
Yeah, and further to your point, it's not going to be easy because the problem is, just to think about how grinding, how much effort these guys put into this year, mm-hmm. and then to think we've got to repeat that all over again.
And step it up a bit even.
And maybe step it up a little. You know, that to me is the difficulty. And they spoke about that in the end of season scrums, talking about, and Coach Maurice was asked about it, and the players were asked about it. And it is, it's a challenge. But the philosophy or the belief is from the coaching staff is that they have a leadership in this room that will allow them to maintain their focus and not kind of get lost in the weeds and think to themselves in November, hey, we went to the Western Conference Finals. We're automatically doing that. We don't need to do the things that we need to do to be successful until, you know, May or June.
The attention to detail continues.
Yeah, exactly.
When we come back, we're going to talk about the Jets forward group for next season. Is the 12 forwards, the regular 12 forwards, already set? And where does that leave some of the young prospects coming up from the Manitoba Moose? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Ehlers into the slot. Return pass to the shot. Oh, it's good. Nikolaj Ehlers. And Wheeler makes a nice move. Dropping up for Scheifele. Near side for Ehlers. A shot. He scores. What a passing play for the Winnipeg Jets. Nikolaj Ehlers snaps it home. Just like that, we are tied at one.
Gets it for Wheeler. Wheeler lost his footing. Line A scores! Blake Wheeler off his knees. Puts it onto the stick of Patrick Line A. Bufflin quickly back in for Stastny. Line A scores! Deflected pass to Patrick Line A. And Line A
puts this right through the pillows of Kari Lehtinen.
Shifley back on it, farther shot, they score! Kyle Connor with the redirect! Beats Jack Campbell and we're tied at one. Near side now for Connor, moves in, shoots and score! Kyle Connor with his second of the night will end it! Jets win! Jets win! Jets win in overtime!
A montage of goals from some of the Jets' offensive primary players. You heard Connor, Laine, Ehlers. We know all the names. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. Dave Minuk, entering next season, do the Jets have their 12 primary forwards already established? You know, Connor, Shifley, Wheeler.
Yep.
Ehlers, Little, Laine.
Yep.
Tanev, Roslovic, Perreault. Kopp, Lowry, Armia. Is that the 12 that is going to start, more than likely start, the next season for the Winnipeg Jets? Or do you see somebody else maybe being signed in free agency? I don't need specifics necessarily. Or somebody coming up from the Manitoba Moose, you know, a guy like Nick Petan, who was a point-of-game player for the Moose, or Brendan Lemieux, who was very effective for the Moose. You know, Mason Appleton was also effective, but I imagine he'd need another year of seasoning in the AHL. So how do the Jets... Didn't even mention Paul Stastny as a potential guy that the Jets re-sign. You know, do the Jets have their primary 12 forwards for next season already established?
Yeah, you'd think so. I mean, you have to think that Roslovic has made the team at this point. I mean, we didn't get a chance. I didn't ask about it, which I probably should have in the end of season scrums because, I mean, as, you know, you're going to have a player like Jack Roslovic who's going to come in. But, I mean, anybody who watched those playoffs saw how good this kid is and knows that he deserves to be on the Winnipeg Jets and shouldn't be going back down to the Manitoba Moose. So, to me, Jack Roslovic has to be an everyday player. Now, of course, he's going to have to earn his spot in training camp. But the reality is that, you know, and if he doesn't, we could see another Kyle Connor situation where he goes down to the Moose, plays a few games, and then, you know, comes up.
And then as a regular after
right,
that.
Right, but I think that's probably, I don't think that's reality. I think the reality is that Jack Roslovic has shown that he deserves to be at this level. So to me, yeah, I think you do, as of right now, have your team that, you know, is fairly established. I know folks want Paul Stastny to be part of the fold, but I don't know from a cap perspective that this team, considering all the players that they need to sign, you know, in addition to the ones they don't necessarily need to sign, but they may sign early, you know, you've got a lot of money that's going to be tied up, and you've got Brian Little coming on with a big contract, you've got, you know, Perreault still on a decent contract. You've got all these guys plus all the young guys that you're wanted to, you know, to sign. And, you know, we've gone through it before. And I'm sure we'll spend a lot of time this summer going over the over those players. But the fact of the matter is that there's a number of RFA and UFAs that Jets have that, well, the UFAs not so much, but the same, like I said.
Yeah, the RFAs are Brandon Tanev, Adam Lowry, Joel Armia, and Marco Dano. I mean, we know that Tanev, Lowry, and Armia are key members of this team. And, you know, certainly maybe one of them is a healthy scratch at some point in time or not. I mean, Adam Lowry seems solidified. You know, he's a key member of this team going forward. Marco Dano was, of course, an extra forward for the majority of the year.
Again, and sometimes an extra defenseman.
You know,
he did occasionally in practice wear the defense uniform.
If they needed an extra body to play on the blue line. I mean, Marco Dano, of course, is an interesting character because he obviously wants an opportunity to play, but I'm not sure if that opportunity is necessarily going to be here in Winnipeg. But given that he's an RFA, you know, he doesn't have a ton of flexibility or ton of options available to him. Maybe the Jets decide to non-tender him, but I'd be surprised if they went that way because he's not going to be expensive and you always need bodies. But obviously time will tell with what happens there. But with guys like Nick Petan, you know, and Brendan Lemieux, I mean, Nick Petan has played, you know, he's played a number of games in the NHL level, hasn't really made an impact in the NHL at this point in time. He's over, you know, he's
almost... Did he play 90 games?
He's had 95 games in the NHL, if I'm not mistaken. And in those 95 games, he's got 21 points. And there's a lot of advocates for Nick Petan who says he just needs an opportunity. And he needs more of an opportunity and not a fourth-line opportunity, and that'll allow him to break out. I mean, he was a point-of-game player with the Moose last year.
Yep.
52 games played, 52 points, 15 goals, 37 assists.
but it doesn't, like, where does he fit in for the plans going forward? A guy like Brendan Lemieux, who has really only had a cup of coffee at the NHL level, you know, 9 games this past season, but he was very effective for the Manitoba Moose last season, 43 points in 51 games, and we know that he brings that edge that maybe some might say the Jets might be missing. I don't know if that's sort of just a sandpaper, not a fisticuffs edge necessarily.
Right.
But, you know, an edge to his game, a sandpaper to his game. Where does he fit in going forward? Those are the big questions to me is, you know, these guys might look up at the NHL level and say, we've proven a lot at the AHL level, especially a guy like Nick Patan.
Mm-hmm.
What's left for me to do here? When or if am I going to get my crack at the NHL level with this team, and who am I replacing in the lineup?
Yeah, I absolutely think you're right, Drew. And I think that, again, that's something that training camp would give them an opportunity. These guys have to have good summers and, you know, really ensure that they're not kind of, because this is their opportunity, to your point. This is a chance for them to say, look, here I am. I've done what you needed me to do at the AHL level. And to their credit, I mean, again, and I was around the Moose a lot, so I saw it. They had good attitudes because they very easily could have been like, I don't want to be here.
Sure.
And again, you know, we didn't see that. And I was around this team a lot. And you're at the AHL level, you're around the team. It's a different way than you are around the NHL team. So you see them a lot more. You get a lot more information. And like I said, from my perspective, they had good attitudes and they did what they needed to do. Now, are there aspects of their games that they need to work on still? Yeah, absolutely. Like all players. Like I said, most players aren't as complete as Jack Roslovic. So you're not getting, that's a diamond, it's not a dime a dozen. That's a diamond in the rough is a Jack Roslovic. You know, like you're not getting a lot of those. But at the same time, you know, from my perspective, they did what they needed to do at the AHL level this year. And we've seen now with Vegas that sometimes you give these players opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
A player who, you know, maybe only had 6 goals the previous season playing limited minutes, and then you give him an opportunity. Well, maybe he does something. Maybe he does something at that NHL level that, you know, he was doing at the AHL level. We don't know. And again, it's not – the problem with like a Nick Patan, for example, is that Nick Patan isn't going to go on the fourth line and put up 90 points in 95 games or something like that.
Sure.
So he's a talented player. He's a complementary player. He's a player who needs to play with other skilled players to flourish, really.
Mm-hmm.
So you can't throw him on a fourth line and say, okay, go ahead and do something, manufacture something, and it's going to occur for him. You put him on a line where he could have some, you know, skill on it. You know, I'm just throwing this out there. I'm saying, like, you put him on a line with Perreault and Roslovic.
Sure.
Like that line could generate because there's a lot of talent on that line. That's a lot of scoring potential there. But again, like, do they want that line up against other, you know, other NHL lines? That's for the coaching staff to decide. I'm just saying, like, sometimes these players will rise to the occasion. And I think guys like Patan and Lemieux understood. And you were right to your point, by the way, that Appleton is definitely another, you know, he could, in theory, earn himself a call-up,
yeah.
but he's definitely time, he's still...
Nobody's counting on it. Nobody would say he's ready to step into the NHL lineup.
No, absolutely. I mean, the guy started with the goal of, quote, making the team from his own perspective.
Sure.
Started on the fourth line, earned his way up to the first line with his play.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like I said, he's a player who needs time to develop. And that's the one thing people have to remember. I mean... You know, we look at these guys and we think to ourselves, why aren't they at the NHL level yet? And that was a flaw we saw with the Atlanta franchise, was that so many of these young prospects were rushed to the NHL way too soon.
Mm-hmm.
So the whole point of the AHL is development. And if you talk to a coach like Pascal Vincent, his whole philosophy, well, these guys want to win. Like nobody in professional sports is happy losing. So he's not going to say, I'm excited to develop players on a losing team. But if you talk to him, you see how important it is for him to graduate players to the Jets.
Mm-hmm.
In a culture of winning, because I think that's important for the team is to have that. And I think that's was acknowledged by Craig Heisinger and the rest of the staff in bringing in veterans like Buddy Robinson and who am I thinking of?
Cam Schilling.
Yeah, okay.
I was
thinking Kurt Schilling for some reason, but Cam Schilling. So
Michael Scarbosa, other guys who are sort of
Scarbosa, I think, had an intention of playing for the Jets as a 13th forward. But yes, you had veteran guys to bring that winning culture in, help the team out. But again, we saw the young players in this organization, the 2015 draft class, really rising. Michael Spacek was another player who, given the opportunity, was really kind of blossoming. But again, it takes time. These guys don't just have one good season in the AHL. It's like, all right, let's call them up and have them play. Like Mason Appleton, to me, is a perfect example. Keep him in the AHL, let him germinate for a bit, and then you have a guy who you can call up and be reliable in the NHL.
Sure.
Because again, there's aspects of their game that aren't simply offensively driven that need to be worked on. And so that's why they have that opportunity with the Moose. So yeah, to a long way of answering your point, Drew, I think that there are definitely players from within that could take the next step, but it's on them. And so we'll see.
With regard to Nick Patan, just before we go to break, it is worth noting, of course, that he is a restricted free agent. As of July 1st, he is an RFA, and he is not waivers exempt anymore. So if he signs a one-way contract mm-hmm. with the Winnipeg Jets, that tells you that he'd have to clear waivers to go back to the Manitoba Moose, and I would be surprised if he would actually clear waivers in that instance, given that he's a young player with a lot of talent and skill, and I'm sure a lot of other teams are keeping an eye on him. So Nick Patan's situation is particularly interesting, given he's a point-of-game player this past season with the Manitoba Moose. A lot of players, a lot of teams would say this is a guy who just needs an opportunity in a top six role or a top nine role at the NHL level. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of contract Nick Patan signs with the Winnipeg Jets, if he does indeed sign one ahead of this coming offseason. When we come back, Jason Bell of the Winnipeg Free Press is going to join us, talk more about the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your texts to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. If we like your text or if we like your tweet, we'll maybe even read it on air. And of course, our website with the absolute latest and with the Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, he's a good friend of our program. We're pleased to welcome back Jason Bell. Jason, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
You've never read one of my tweets on the air.
You've never tweeted at us.
That's probably true, actually.
Why would you tweet at us? We're usually just, we're next to you in the press box or something. You just say it to our faces.
We just see every room in the downtown ring. That's true.
Exactly. But, I mean, if you wanted to start tweeting at us, we'd be glad to read it on air. You have my guarantee.
I appreciate that.
Yeah, just keep it PG, if you don't mind.
Always.
Okay. Jason, always appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us this morning. Brought you on to talk, of course, about the Winnipeg Jets as we're now into sort of off-season mode that, 6 days have passed since the team was defeated by the Vegas Golden Knights. And, to start the show, Dave and I were talking about expectations and how the expectations have now changed for this team. At the beginning of this season, it was playoffs or bust. Now that this team has gone to the Western Conference Final, is the conversation about Stanley Cup, Western Conference Championship or bust going into next season?
You know what? I'm not sure you can really set those kind of lofty goals because so much changes every year, doesn't it, fellas? I mean, you never quite know what's going to happen during the off season. You never know how a group-to-group is going to sort of come together and what's going to sort of propel them forward. And I think back to this past season, I think a lot of us believe that this was probably a playoff team. And then maybe, if they got through a first round, that would have been a bonus, because I don't like to think back to 2014 and think, they've been building since 2014. There were some bumps along the way, and then they get to this year, and I think if everybody would have been content to maybe just have a playoff team, and then you start to really move forward. But it was almost like they were a little, they got a little bit ahead of themselves this year, didn't they? And they end up winning, pretty handily against a Minnesota team that I think certainly on paper they were better than. And then they run up against a Nashville Predators team who, again, had been a little bit better than them during the regular season, looked like the sort of the kings of the National Hockey League, and they get past them. And then, everything came to a screeching halt against Vegas, as we all well know. But to answer your question, as long as they're, comfortably in the playoffs and they're not, sort of positioning themselves down the stretch to have to win a wild card spot, I think that probably the organization and also its supporters would probably be pretty content knowing that they're in the playoffs. And then, once you get into that postseason, you want to try and survive that first round, and then you're going to take off from there. But we've seen some big first-round surprises over the course of the last 10 or 20 years. So I think it would be folly to just say, yeah, this team should be in a Western Conference final every single year.
You know, Jason, after 31 regular season games and 10 playoff games, Jack Roslovic, to me, has solidified his spot in this lineup. What do you think? Do you think that this is a guy who's penciled into that top 12 for the Jets next year, or do you think he's got to earn his spot in training camp?
Well, I really like his game. And, you know, not just because you can just see some great offensive instincts, obviously, but I think he's a lot more defensively responsible than we give him credit for. I know that, you know, during the course of the postseason, he maybe had a couple of giveaways that he was going to learn from. He certainly had a bad penalty that he's going to learn from. But, no, I really like his game. It'd be pretty tough to automatically slot him in as a second line if the club is unable to convince and that's not so much convince Paul Stastny. It's more convince their accountants they can pay for Paul Stastny. But, you know, I think Jack Roslovic may not be quite ready for prime time, that second line center. But, yeah, it'd be hard not to imagine that he's not on this club next year as a permanent fixture in the top, you know, and even maybe a top nine role. And I really liked what he and Brian Little and Matthew Proe at least tried to accomplish in those last couple of games against Vegas. They weren't successful as far as goal scoring, but really nobody was. So I really like his game a lot.
Jason Bell, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets. Jason, you mentioned Paul Stastny, and of course he's an unrestricted free agent now. You know, is he a luxury that the Winnipeg Jets can afford, given all the players they have to re-sign both this year and then entering into next season? Is Paul Stastny going to fit within, even if they're a max, if they spent the max of the salary cap, expected to be around $80 million, is he a luxury the Jets can afford?
Well, you know, I've written about this. My boss wrote about it in a column. You guys have talked about it extensively. I know the other guys in town have talked about it. And, you know, I became a writer because my math skills are really poor. even sort of, you know, rudimentary math tells me that it just doesn't seem to work the way that it looks right now. I mean, Paul Stastny looked like he enjoyed his time here. And I say that, and I think, you know, David, you were in the room too. I mean, it just looked like he was a real good fit there. Obviously, mm-hmm. him and Blake Wheeler have a pretty deep friendship. I think the opportunity to play with the two young kids, and Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine, he puts him in a pretty enviable position for any sort of veteran forward that's looking to train, you know, create some of that magic again at the age of 32, 33. And I think that he, you know, although his family only saw the real good parts of Winnipeg as far as the whiteout in the summer and, you know, the start to summer and whatnot, they didn't necessarily see, you know, the third week of January. But it just seems to be a lot of reasons why somebody like him might want to sign here. But it does come down to dollars and cents. And when you think about what's already guaranteed salary in place for next year with Bufflin at 7 and Shifley at 6 and Ehlers kicks in at 6 and Wheeler is still close to 6 and Brian Little's $5 million kicks in, and you got all these other guys. You're up to, I think the math was $54 million, and then you still got to figure out how you're getting Jacob Trouba signed. Does he want to be here, and what's he worth? Josh Morrissey's going to get a huge increase, and so is Connor Hellebuyck, who's up for a Vezina Trophy. You know, you're going to have to pay Adam Lowry, and there's, you know, Joel Armia at times looked like the kind of guy that Joel Armia shows in spurts where he can be a real valuable contributor, if not a top nine, then a terrific, you know, fourth line with Lowry and Kopp, that kind of thing. So, I mean, what my point is that they're going to have to pay a whole lot of these RFAs, you know, and all of a sudden you get to the cap and then you go, oh yeah, there's Paul Stastny too. So the only way I can see that happening is if he is willing to take some type of a sort of new hometown discount, as it were, and they move a salary. And whether does that mean that they decide to move like a Tyler Myers, a defenseman? Do they try and move Perreault or Little, or does Steve Mason get bought out? And the question was posed by Mike McIntyre to Kevin Cheveldayoff about Steve Mason. And of course, Kevin Cheveldayoff is not going to say anything at a press conference, but $4 million for a backup goaltender is a whole lot of money. So as it stands right now with the money on the books, I don't see how Paul Stastny works out, but that's not to say that they can't make moves to create some space.
Well, Jason, sticking with the idea of players they need to sign, one player who, you know, it's amazing what a difference a 1 year and a lot of winning will do. But Jacob Trouba talked about, you know, getting something done, and in the end of season scrums spoke about it being the quicker the better. You wrote about it. How quickly do you think we see something get done with Jacob Trouba, and what kind of contract do you think we'll see for the Jets top pairing defenseman?
Well, what was the original ask? $7 million. I mean, I think you'd have to think that if that was a real number, I would have to think that him and his agent have maybe backed off a little bit. I don't know if that's realistic. Having said that, Jacob Trouba played some pretty darn good hockey with him and Josh Morrissey, and when they're at their best, that's as good a defensive pairing in the National Hockey League in my mind. I think Jacob Trouba is going to sign here. I don't think it's going to be a super long deal. I wouldn't consider it a bridge deal, but you know, this is just me with no sort of inside information on this, but I think he's going to be sort of one of those five-year, $28 to $30 million guys. And he seemed to be a fairly content player this year, and he was playing some good hockey towards the stretch.
Jason Bell, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, we're discussing the Winnipeg Jets. Jason, so the same question, you know, there's been a lot of talk that, you know, Josh Morrissey might get a bridge deal because he wouldn't get a long-term one. Given everything you've seen from Morrissey, wouldn't the Jets be better off signing him long-term, maybe saving a little bit of money, than going necessarily with a bridge deal where his offensive game could even continue to blossom and maybe cost more down the road?
Yeah, you're echoing exactly the kind of things we talked about the other day on the sort of exit day, and it just seems like he's a guy that you want to lock up to one of those, because you're seeing the best that Josh Morrissey has to offer at this stage in his career, except some of that offense that we still think is there.
Mm-hmm.
And if that starts to flourish, he becomes one of these really elite two-way guys, which he very well could be. Then the price really goes up. You know, and he's also he's just a great team guy, right? You can tell that he's really respected and valued and gets along with everybody, and he's becoming a bit of the face of the franchise, at least on the back end in some respects, because he's always in front of the camera. He's so well-spoken and a very, very smart individual, and it just seems like the kind of guy that True North wants to keep around for a good long while.
Jay, are you a little surprised at the way things ended with Tobias Enstrom?
I'm only surprised that, this is going to come across as being a bit heartless, but I'm only surprised that he actually played more than he did in that playoff run. I thought Joe Morrow was a better option earlier on. And, I mean, what are you going to do? You're not talking about the last game of a regular season. It doesn't matter when you want to play Chris Thorburn just to make sure that he has one last tour around the ice. I mean, this is a Western Conference final. And if you believe that there's a better option out there in your organization than Toby Enstrom, then you play him. And that was what they did. And Paul Maurice obviously felt that he needed more offense in that last game. They needed some way to break through that sort of stifling Vegas situation and get to Marc-Andre Fleury, and he said that maybe Joe Morrow would offer a little bit more offense, and you know, he made two other roster moves too. I mean, Andrew Kopp hadn't missed a game all year, and all of a sudden you get yanked out of the lineup. So yes, it was tough, and on a guy who's been a great soldier for this team for a good long while, and you know, in a lot of respects people talk about him selflessly waiving the no trade clause, and you know, to allow them to kind of escape with all the bodies that they wanted after that expansion draft. So, yes, it was, you know, he's been a good Winnipeg Jet for a long time, but, you got to win now when you get an opportunity, and Paul Maurice felt like, you know, having Joe Morrow play ahead of him was the way to go. And, of course, Toby wasn't around. He doesn't speak to us very often anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't there the last day, because we would have loved to have asked him those kinds of questions, but we weren't really able to, so.
Jason Bell covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Jason, always appreciate your time this morning and throughout the season, and we'll do it again real soon.
Anytime, guys. You have a good weekend.
You too, Jason. Thanks again. When we come back, we discuss the Winnipeg Jets defense, particularly the left side of the Jets defense, entering into the offseason and potentially the start of the 2018-19 campaign. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Ehlers. Banks it back to the left point to Morrow. The blast scores! Joe Morrow, the shot. It tipped somebody in front of the net and between the pads of Devin Dubnyk. And what a big goal for Joe Morrill.
Little and Carlson set for the faceoff. Little wins it. Morrissey scores! Josh Morrissey has his first NHL playoff goal, and it's a big one. This game is tied at one.
The Jets' goal scoring in the playoffs was bookended by a Joe Morrow goal and a Josh Morrissey goal. Morrow getting the first goal of the playoffs against the Minnesota Wild. Josh Morrissey getting the last goal of the playoffs against the Vegas Golden Knights. We're going to talk about the Winnipeg Jets left side defense this segment on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I should say that this segment is also brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Seems, David, that Toby Enstrom is not going to be a member of the Winnipeg Jets next season. We know he's an unrestricted free agent. Prior to the Game 5 scratch and what sounds like some hurt feelings on at least the part of Toby Enstrom, it doesn't sound like he's going to come back next year. I thought it might have been possible before all this went down. Are you comfortable if the Jets start next season with a left-side defense of Josh Morrissey, who's your clear-cut top-pairing left-side defenseman, the oft-injured Dmitry Kulikov, and then Ben Chiarot and Joe Morrow, you know, and with, I guess, an asterisk next to what Sammy Niku's future is, either with the Jets or with the Moose entering next season? Is that a good enough left-side defense, or is that an area you could see the Jets looking to maybe shore up via trade or free agency ahead of the start of next season?
Yeah, it's a good question, Drew. I mean, in my mind, and I have a tendency to take a long range view of things, like I think Sammy Niku would do well with another season with the Moose. Not necessarily, again, not necessarily it has to be a full season, but I don't think it would be a problem for that young player who still, again, like I said, people have a tendency to look at the numbers and say, oh, this guy's going to do this at the NHL level, or he can put up those kind of points at the NHL level. Sammy Niku is a wonderful talent. His skating is phenomenal. There's areas of his defensive game that still need some work. And I think, again, it's not as glaring when you make an error in the AHL as it is in the NHL level. And I think from a developmental perspective, you're better off having Sammy start with the Moose and play with the Moose. And if need be, call him up.
Or if he outplays.
Sure. Of course. I mean, that's always the X factor that you can't take, that you can't, you know, we can't speak about because
can't
we can't
penalize a guy for outplaying his competition.
I mean, the reality is guys rise to the occasion. I'm simply saying putting expectations on a player, you know, again, Sammy Niku's 21. He's not exactly like a fresh faced 18-year-old kid, but there's, you know, we see defensemen take longer to get to the NHL than traditionally forwards do. So the fact is that, you know, if he takes some time, it's not like, to me, again, there's this view, it seems, that you're, if a guy isn't in the NHL immediately, there's a problem. He's a bust. And to me, or there's, you're stunting his growth. And I actually think, again, and it's my own opinion, but I think it's the opposite. I think you're actually doing the guy a service by allowing him to develop in that league. And as opposed to the expectation, because again, guys get killed. You know, when a guy makes a mistake at the NHL level, he gets torn to shreds.
Sure.
You know, it's in a market like this where everybody cares about, lives and breathes with every goal for, every goal against. You know,
every mistake is magnified.
Yeah, and that's just the reality of a market that's hockey mad. So it's not, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm just saying it is what it is.
Sure.
But at the same time, you know, do you want Sammy Niku to be under that sort of pressure while he's still developing other aspects of his game? My personal opinion is, or no, I think you stay, keep him with the Moose, and you know, potentially just allow him to develop. And again, like I said, Drew, if he rises to the occasion, then that's what he's done. And then he's earned the right to be with the Jets. I just think from a developmental perspective, you keep him there and allow him to develop. Now, to your point about whether you're comfortable with that left side, it's an interesting conversation because if you recall correctly, moving back to last summer, there was a lot of talk about the Jets. Don't you remember there was all these reports saying the Jets will give Tobias Enstrom a 1-year deal after this because he showed the loyalty for I'm just saying those were the reports that were coming out last year.
It made sense that there'd be a bit of a quid pro quo. You waived your no move as to allow us the flexibility with regard to the expansion.
Yeah, you essentially saved the franchise a huge cost potentially.
Yeah, and as a result, we'll give you a 1 year extension so that you have another year, $1.5 million, $2 million, whatever the number was going to be.
Sure. Now, I mean, to me, again, and there's people who don't like Tobias Enstrom, and there's people who love Tobias Enstrom. Seems to be one of those players who
polarizing.
Is very polarizing. I mean, I think if you get him for the right amount of money, you would bring him back just because I think he's a steadying presence. I think he plays, he's a veteran guy who in my mind is still better than some of those other guys you've mentioned. And do you want him as your top pairing? No. Do you want him as your second pairing? Maybe not. But as a third pairing guy, if you get Tobias Enstrom for the right amount of money, to me, that's not necessarily a bad thing.
I agree with you. And that's why I thought it a possibility. I mean, Paul Maurice spoke about how Dustin Byfuglien is so comfortable playing with Tobias Enstrom and how they have the camaraderie and the chemistry having played together for so many years. Does the way it unfolded in Game 5, given that he was a healthy scratch, apparently, which he was quite furious about, given that he played through some injuries in the playoffs thus far, do you think that ship has sailed now, or do you think that they can make friendly the waters again between the team and between the team and the player and come to an agreement on a 1 year deal? Or do you think that is now gone and he's off either to Sweden or to another NHL team or wherever he decides to play next season, if he decides to play?
Yeah, no, I think that kind of stuff can get worked out again. I don't think anything blew up. I mean, again, we don't know. These are just reports, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, here's the problem. The report was that he played with broken ribs.
Yes.
And that he was pissed because he anticipated that playing because he had played through hurt, and why are you scratching me now at this point?
Sure.
Then the team comes out and says he didn't have broken ribs. So the question is, who's lying? Because someone's lying. Or someone's got something wrong. I shouldn't say lying. Someone's got something, someone could be lying. Or someone's got something wrong. But the fact is, if you're wrong about one thing, are you necessarily right about the other, which is that he's upset with the team? Tobias Enstrom not talking isn't some sort of revelation. Dustin Byfuglien didn't talk.
Yeah.
I don't think. Did Dustin Byfuglien talk? No. I don't think so.
But Tobias Enstrom, producer Chris Curry,
yeah,
I think counted it up and said that Toby Enstrom maybe spoke to the media 3 times this year.
Yeah, but I guarantee you, if you look back through the year,
that's all he ever speaks to the media.
Yeah, Byfuglien didn't talk.
Yeah.
But Enstrom doesn't talk, and that's fine. The reality is this: people have to understand there are guys who are comfortable talking to the media, and there are guys who are not.
Mm-hmm.
And I've talked to plenty of players at the NHL level and at the AHL level who will sit and talk to you for an hour, but if they're not, but they may be. Literally give you like 10-second answers because they just don't like being on camera and being recorded. So that's just the reality. Some guys are comfortable with it and they do it. So other guys don't like to do it, but they still do it. And again, it's just personal preference. So, I mean, I don't think that means anything that he didn't speak. He spoke 3 times because, again, if you go back through the years, we talked about Tobias Enstrom probably 3 times every year. So I, again, is it something that the team can work out? Yeah, I think so. I mean, at the end of the day, it's the only organization he knows. He's very comfortable in Winnipeg. And I think he sees what the team has the potential to do. So if the team comes in and says, look, we can offer you this and we'll give you that, and he's willing to take it and there aren't crazy other offers elsewhere, why wouldn't you do it?
Going back to my original question, let's say he's no longer a member of the team. And so your left side, the only guys you really have under contract on your left side are, Josh Morrissey, assuming you get the RFA deal done, and there's no question that the Jets will get that done. Dmitry Kulikov is still under contract for another 2 years. Ben Chiarot has a year on his deal before he becomes a UFA. And Joe Morrow is also an RFA. So are you, given what you've seen of, let's say, Chiarot and Morrow, when they played the bulk of the games in the first round, they played all the games in the first round against the Minnesota Wild, are you comfortable with Morrissey, Kulikov, and then one of Chiarot or Morrow as your left side defense going into next year? And can the Jets even afford to acquire somebody else to play on the left side that it's probably going to be more expensive than Morrow or Chiarot?
Well, I think that is the question that needs to be answered before the previous one, because I think it's the reality is that, you've got Dmitry Kulikov making almost $5
million. Mm-hmm. 4.3, yeah.
Was it 4.3?
Yeah.
I thought it was 4.7, but yeah, you're right.
It's still a very expensive
contract. Up 300. I didn't think I was rounding up 700, but
yeah.
Okay. So you've got, you've already got a lot of money, kind of, and you're going to potentially lock up some more with Josh Morrissey.
Sure.
So to me, who are you going to go out and get that's going to, provide you with what you're wanting? Now, Drew, I think to your point, if you lose a Kulikov, then you're in trouble in terms of now you've lost.
Lose him to injury.
You lose him to injury, yeah, of course.
Given that he's got injury concerns the last two seasons, it's probably something you have to almost prepare for.
Right. So then it becomes a function of, okay, you know, if you have Schroeder or Morrow on the left side in your third pairing, fine, whatever. It's not ideal, but like it is what it is.
Yeah, but you can live with that.
Right. But I'm saying if you have to move those guys up to the second pairing, that's more of a problem. And again, although I have familiarity with Dustin Byfuglien, so I mean, it's fine, but like at the same time, it's not ideal.
Mm-hmm.
But I just don't know that you have any other options simply based on how much money you're going to be investing on the rest of the team.
I guess the only other option is maybe you look to trade one of your younger assets, a guy like we mentioned in the first segment, a guy like Nick Petan or a guy like Brendan Lemieux. And I'm just speculating here. I'm not saying that this is going to happen, but you maybe trade one of those guys who has a glass ceiling above them to make it in, into the forward group and try and shore up your left side defenseman via trade that way, maybe a cheaper contract for a cheaper contract. Again, teams don't regularly trade players like that, but it's that's just an interesting area to focus on for the Jets entering the offseason is that left side defense and how they manipulate that and how they dole out time and positioning in the season ahead. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Colton Orr. He's, of course, the retired NHL player, the pride of Garden City. Colton Orr joins us next for more Jets talk and Stanley Cup playoff talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend Colton Orr, veteran of 477 NHL games and the pride of Garden City. Colton, good morning and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning, Drew and Dave. I appreciate you having me on. Bear with me a little bit. I'm having a little bit of a seasonal allergy attack and I'm congested. My eyes are like almost shut. I've been in almost over 200 hockey fights and I had never looked this bad, I don't think, after any of them. It's just crazy right now, but thanks for having me on, guys. I appreciate it.
Colton, you know, the allergies are crushing us, too. I don't know if you can hear my voice, but I've actually lost my voice this week, so the allergies are hitting us here in Winnipeg as well.
Oh, I know it's bad, but no, guys. How you guys doing?
We're doing very well, Colton, and we appreciate you playing hurt, as it were, and battling through the allergy injury to join us this Saturday morning. Talk about the Winnipeg Jets, talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs. I want to start with the Winnipeg Jets, Colton. I mean, obviously, you played in a number of playoff games throughout your professional hockey career and your junior hockey career as well. You know, the Jets get all the way to the Western Conference Final. They lose in five games, as you're well aware. What's it like to be a player in a losing dressing room when you get so far into the playoffs and then you just fall a little bit short? What's it like being in that dressing room afterwards?
It's tough. It's quiet. You try and go back a little bit and what you could have done differently. And you just want to figure it out. You've gotten so far and you're battling so hard together and working, you know, you get so much closer in the playoffs when you're winning like that. And it's just a great experience. And after it's all said and done, you try and just look back and see what they can do next year, to kind of continue the run they had this year and improve on that. But right afterwards when you're sitting there, it's quiet and, you just want to kind of get out of there and move on and, try and just, get away from the rink after that.
You know, Colton, nobody wants to go through this. It's not easy to have battled so hard, spent as much effort and time, you know, honing your craft and doing all these things to fall short. But how important is that from a player's development perspective, especially from a team like the Jets who have so few playoff games under their belt? How important is that for them to hit their ultimate goal, which is to win the Stanley Cup?
Well, that's big. And I've talked a lot of just about experience and getting that experience in the playoffs, playing, deep in the playoffs, those long series, battling through adversity, battling through injury, everything you go through in the playoffs, getting that and knowing what it takes to get there and what it's going to take to, like, how hard that was and to be able to move on further and make deeper in the playoffs and try and make the finals. So you get that experience and you also start building a winning culture, a team that wants to make the playoffs and, they get better every year. So when you get those young guys and you get that winning culture in the organization and they know what it takes, it continues to help them there in the future, and especially with the young guys.
And Colton Orr is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets. Colton, you know, not necessarily Jets specific, but obviously Marc-Andre Fleury has been remarkable in these playoffs. When you're in opposition, when you're an opponent and you're going up against a goaltender who seems to be making every save imaginable, what's that feeling like on the bench? I mean, do you hold your stick tighter? Do you press a little bit more? You know, what's it like going up against a goaltender who's absolutely playing at the peak of his ability?
Well, you start to think, and you get to thinking, like, we can't allow, too many goals, because you think if you're playing up against Fleury, you're having tough to get one, two goals. So you start being a little bit more aware defensively, and you start clinching your stick a little bit more, and not wanting to make any mistakes. Because, you know, if you make a couple mistakes and you get down a goal or two, it's going to be tough to come back with a guy like that. And you try and you want to get and rattle him and get in front of him and all that, but he seems to be a guy right now that he's not getting rattled. He's having fun. You see him give that kind of a wet willy to Wheeler.
The other day.
And it's just, he's having fun. He's enjoying himself. And you can't have a guy that you can't rattle, and he's that focused, and he just sees he's enjoying every minute of it. It gets frustrating because you don't know how to get to him. It's hard to find ways to beat him.
On the other end of the team scale, what about Alexander Ovechkin? How impressed have you been through his playoffs so far? And do you expect him to take his game to the next level even further when he goes into the Stanley Cup Finals?
Yeah, he looks like a guy that's absolutely just driven to win that cup. He's leading that team, all over. He's been physical. He's been scoring goals. He's been good defensively. He's doing everything. He's really the driving force in that team right now. And you can tell that when you got a guy like Ovechkin doing all those little things and playing physical and scoring the goals, everyone else is going to follow. And they've got, they're getting, Wilson's a guy it's going to be tough to play against. And, they're getting some goals from Smith Pelly in their fourth line. And they've got, they've just been all around team, pretty deep team this year. And it looks like they're all following Ovechkin's lead right now.
Colton Orr, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Jets, talking about the Stanley Cup Final between the Golden Knights and the Washington Capitals. Colton, I would suggest that for the first time all playoffs, the Golden Knights are the favorite. I mean, you might have said they were the favorite against the Kings and the Sharks by virtue of where they finished in the standings, but a lot of people maybe were disrespecting them, saying that they think that they're primed for an upset. Now, even according to Vegas, the Golden Knights are the favorite. How do you think that changes things for the Golden Knights, that they can't play we're not getting any respect card ahead of the Stanley Cup Final?
Well, yeah, I think everyone got tired of betting against them and losing. They've proven everyone wrong all season, right from the beginning of the year, from their starts to all the way through the season and the playoffs. They just continue to prove everyone wrong. They're a team that, like you said, they've been playing that misfit and undercard, underdogs all the way through. And now I think there will be a little added pressure. This is going to be, a series where Ovechkin's been, like you said, he's been really good in playoffs, and he's never been here. So this is going to be something where he's going to want to really perform. So you'll see a little bit more pressure on Vegas, where you can see some of these guys a little bit younger, holding their sticks a little tighter. I don't think you can go against them right now. They've been so hot, and everyone's been playing, doing everything that they're being asked by their coach, and they've got Fleury in net. So it's going to be a tough task for Washington to kind of go up against Vegas, and especially when they have home ice as well.
Colton, going to the Capitals' perspective, it's interesting to me that this is a team that nobody talked about throughout the year. And I remember when we were having a show during the regular season, speaking to that point and how it's probably good for Washington that nobody's talking about them, because it allows them just to play the game without expectation. Just how loose do you think this team is playing right now? And also, how impressed have you been with Holtby's game, considering he wasn't the starter to open the playoffs for this team, but now it clearly looks like the goalie we've all seen throughout the years?
Well, how many times did we look at Washington saying, oh, here we go again, they're finished, and they kept winning, and they kept Same thing on this side. No one expected them to be where they were. Everyone, you know, kept playing the curse that they're never going to get past the Eastern Conference. And it's something I think that Ovechkin's kind of taken personally, and this team is kind of used as bulletin board points that they can use for motivation. So they wanted to prove everyone wrong as well. So these are two teams that are going up against each other that really have something to prove. But especially Washington, where they've been so close and had such great teams, and year after year they continue to dominate during the season, and they really want to try and get this one done this year.
Colton Orr, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, talking about the Stanley Cup playoffs, talking about the Winnipeg Jets, talking about the NHL in general. Colton, you're living in New York City. The Rangers hired their new head coach earlier this week. It's David Quinn, a rookie NHL head coach, obviously had a great career in the NCAA. What were your thoughts on the hiring of David Quinn as the Rangers' next head coach?
Well, I think this is a really smart move by the New York Rangers by bringing in a guy that has really a lot of experience with college players and younger athletes that he's able to showing that he's a really good coach at developing young talent, and so he's going to be a guy that's going to come in here and be a coach where he's going to have to kind of develop players on the fly and while they're at the NHL level, but let them be able to develop yet try and find a way to put a pretty good team out there in New York. When you're playing the New York market, it's tough to, they're not really wanting a rebuild. It's tough for them to be go through a losing season. So they're going to have to find a balance where they're able to have the young guys playing, developing, but also put a decent product out on the ice as well. But I think he's the guy to come in here and that will be able to help those young players, reach their potential. And that's exactly what the Rangers need right now.
Colton, another one of your former teams, the Toronto Maple Leafs, made a big move, hiring Kyle Dubas as their general manager. Do players pay attention to that kind of thing? Do they care that, he's a younger guy, or do they see the success he's had with the Toronto Marlies in terms of building that team up, and really that's all they care about is winning?
Well, he's been there for a while now, so he's earned a lot of respect around that organization, and I was there when he first came in, when I was with Toronto, and he's a guy that, he knows the game a lot. He's at more games, than anybody I know. He watches a lot of hockey, watches a lot of video, and he really has a new way of breaking down the game and his whole view on analytics and everything. So he's really earned that respect. He's kind of earned the right to, get that role. And, I think, Brendan Shanahan, knew what he wanted and knew that he was going to be the man for the job. And, it's going to be a role for him that's going to be it's going to be a big jump for him. But he's done a lot for that organization. And you look at some of the young talents they have with the Marlies and with them in the Eastern Conference, during the championship now in the NHL, which is, a pretty good feat for them to be there. And it looks like they got a squad that can possibly win it this year. And that just speaks to, product that Dubas has been able to put on the ice for the Marlies.
Last question for you, Colton. You played one season with the Regina Pats in the WHL. They're in the Memorial Cup final this weekend. You keep an eye on the Pats at all, or is your time there too short to really feel a connection to the community?
You know what? I do have a good connection. I still talk to my billets. I've been a little bit busy the fall, too much of the Memorial Cup finals right now, but I had a great experience playing in Regina, and I really enjoyed my time there, and the organization it was great to me and everyone. So it was a fun time, but I haven't been able to follow them too much as of late.
And Colton Orr is a veteran of 477 NHL games with the Bruins, the Rangers, and the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's a favorite of ours here on the program. Colton, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
Oh, no problem, guys. Thanks for having me, and take care. And this has been looking forward to some more Stanley Cup finals here because it's been a long break.
It has been. Thanks, Colton. Well, appreciate it.
Yeah.
Take care. When we come back, Mike Kelly of TSN is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290-90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From TSN and the NHL Network, we're pleased to welcome to the program Mike Kelly. Mike, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. How are you?
Doing very well, Mike. How about yourself?
Doing great.
That's great. Love to hear that. Mike, obviously we brought you on to talk about the Stanley Cup playoffs, talk about the NHL in general. I want to start, of course, with the Vegas Golden Knights and goaltender Marc-Andre Fleury. If Fleury is only league average, or say a little bit above league average, and not otherworldly like he's been through a lot of these playoffs, what does that do to the Golden Knights' chances in the Stanley Cup final?
Well, I mean, part of that question, I guess, would be what Braden Holtby does.
Sure.
But, you know, yeah, Marc-Andre Fleury, I think of both teams remaining right now, would be the leading candidate for playoff MVP. He's been the best player in the playoffs for anybody. And so let's put that aside and acknowledge how great he's been. At the same time, you know, they're not there because of Marc-Andre Fleury. That's not the reason that the Vegas Golden Knights are in the cup final. It's arguably, and I would say, the biggest reason. It's not the only reason. This team, offensively and defensively, doesn't get, in my opinion, nearly as much credit as they should for how well they play. They create a ton of offense. At 5-on-5, they've got, you know, great numbers in terms of the shot generation, the quality of the shots they're generating. You know, it's no surprise to anybody at this point. They create a lot of offense off turnovers and off, you know, excellent puck tracking and forcing teams to make decisions quickly. And ultimately they end up creating a lot of turnovers. Because of that, they create a lot of opportunities off the rush, which are high danger chances. And defensively, the team does an incredible job of limiting the amount of quality looks that the opposition gets in their end. A lot of teams that generate a lot off the rush tend to give up a lot at the same time. You know, Pittsburgh's an example. The Blackhawks this year were an example. Vegas doesn't do that. They're very responsible defensively. So at the end of the day, you've got a Vegas team that leads at even strength. Every team in the playoffs at shots on net from the slot. They lead every team in limiting shots on net from the slot. They lead every team in creating scoring chances off the rush, and they limit the most scoring chances off the rush. They give up the fewest going back the other way. None of that has anything to do with Marc-Andre Fleury, who just so happens to have been brilliant at the same time. So it's a perfect storm for Vegas. Everything's clicking for them in terms of even strength anyways. You know, special teams, I think Washington can take them in that area, but the Vegas Golden Knights, it's not an accident that they're here. So to answer your question, if Marc-Andre Fleury had been just average, I guess, to this point, they'd have a chance to be here. They probably wouldn't have gone 12-3 to get here. But this team is a whole lot more than just a hot goalie.
You know, Mike, you made an interesting point, I thought, last week when you were writing about ozone time, and you said Vegas is 11th out of 16 teams in terms of allowing offensive zone possession. Now, are you a little surprised by the fact that they've, you know, are that rank, yet they've had as much success as they've had?
Not really, just because, again, it goes into how they play. And, you know, what I've learned in working with statistics for a number of years is that it's really difficult to, you know, there's a handful of things that are obviously very significant. The quality of the opportunities you're giving up. It's really difficult in a lot of areas to say, oh, this team does this well, so they must be good. Mm-hmm. Or this team doesn't do this well, so they must be bad. It really depends a lot of the time on how teams play and what they're trying to achieve. And you look at Vegas, like I said, it's you know, in the playoffs, as you mentioned, they've given up a lot of zone time. Teams have had the puck in their end more than Vegas has had the puck in the attacking zone. Yet they still create more opportunities than anybody, and they still give up the fewest. And that's a testament to how well they play and how well they execute. So, you know, the Winnipeg Jets series is a great example. Over the course of the five games, the Jets offensive zone possession was at about 36 minutes, and I think Vegas was around 24. And this is probably why a lot of people on that team, you'd hear these comments, you know, we win this game 9 out of 10 times, and you know, we outplayed them for the last five periods, and the Jets probably thought they should have had a better fate. At the end of the series, Vegas created more quality scoring opportunities than the Winnipeg Jets did. And, I, you know, Fleury made some superhuman saves. He was really good, and he outplayed Connor Hellebuyck. But at the same time, Vegas earned that win. I thought they were the better team. So it can be a bit misleading when you just look at certain things, you know, perhaps like a shot totals without digging into the quality of it, or zone time possession without digging into, well, what are these teams doing? And Paul Maurice had a great quote about it. Or, sorry, John Cooper in the Tampa series had a great quote about that idea when Tampa lost game six. And he said, you know, we've got all this zone time and we're cycling the puck for 25 to 30 seconds and we accomplish nothing. That's exactly what happened to Tampa against Washington. In that game, they had more zone time, but the Capitals created a lot more quality opportunities. They ended up winning the game. So not entirely surprising that Vegas is allowing more possession than they're gaining because of the way that they play. It's been effective for them all year.
Mike Kelly, our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Mike is with TSN and the NHL Network. Mike, we know when you mentioned how good Vegas is in transition. Well, the Washington Capitals are also one of the best teams in transition. There's only two teams left, of course, in the playoffs. So how do you think the Golden Knights are going to be able to handle the Capitals when they get their opportunities to change the flow of a game and have a turnover in the neutral zone and a quick strike attack?
Well, so that's what's really interesting to me is okay, you've got these two teams, you know, two teams left like you talk about, and Vegas and Washington have created more off the rush than any teams in the playoffs. So already you know how these teams like to generate a lot of their offense at even strength. What interested me is, like I talked about, Vegas allowing the fewest. Washington's a little farther down the list. They've allowed the sixth fewest. So you know, not elite in that area in the playoffs anyways, so might be a little bit of an advantage to Vegas there in terms of how they handle a transition game. And I thought the San Jose Sharks, of the three teams that Vegas faced in the playoffs, would present them the biggest challenge in creating offense through the neutral zone. And, you know, that's the series that went the deepest for Vegas. It went six games. San Jose was able to limit Vegas more than any team in creating off the rush, and they created a fair bit of opportunity as well, but it wasn't enough. So I see a bit of similarity in terms of how San Jose plays and what Washington might be looking to execute at 5-on-5 more than the other teams anyways. But I still think Vegas is better positioned than Washington just in its ability to defend. They don't get caught nearly as often as the Capitals do. Although I'll say one thing about Washington, which I found really interesting. The most high danger area on the ice to give up shots from, the inside slot area right in front of the net. Capitals did a terrible job of this in the regular season. They were second last in terms of giving up shots from this area. The second best in the playoffs. You know, they have come leaps and bounds defensively in the playoffs this year and the way they're playing. And I think, you know, we know they can score. We know they got a great power play. We know they've got a stud goalie. I really think that the team defense has been a huge component as to why the Capitals have gotten farther than they ever have in the Ovechkin era.
Now, Mike, what would you attribute that to? Because if you think about it, I mean, you play a certain way for 82 games, all of a sudden now in the playoffs, you know, generally teams don't just change up their style. So what would you attribute that change in ranking for Washington?
Well, it's a great question. You know, I think there's some defensemen on the Capitals that have stepped their games up pretty considerably. I think Matt Niskanen has done a great job. Dmitry Orlov's done a good job. He loves to jump into the play and creates a lot of good scoring opportunities as well. But it's really, to me, been a by-committee type effort by the Capitals. And you know, you'd have to dig into the video a little deeper. And this was, you know, these were numbers I was looking at yesterday and things that I'll look at a little closer before we get to the opening game on Monday. But one thing that I did notice is their blocking shots at an incredible rate. And when you talk about shot blocking, you know, some people will tell you, well, if you're blocking a lot of shots, it means you don't have a puck, so it might not be a good thing necessarily. You know, one measure that I look at to look at it a little more clearly is just the percentage of the shot attempts you give up. How many of those are you blocking? And the Capitals are blocking 37% of the shot attempts they give up, which is the best of any playoff team. So, you know, they're getting in lanes, no matter what you think about shot blocking, in the playoffs, it's huge. You know, the Penguins blocked a ton of shots last year en route to winning the Stanley Cup, and I don't think anybody would label them a shot-blocking team. So it matters, and the Capitals have done a good job of it, and it certainly helped, you know, what they've been doing defensively so far in the playoffs.
Mike, we'll let you go on this last question. Alex Ovechkin has finally made it to a Stanley Cup final. Can this put to rest the idea that he's not a big game player once and for all? The numbers don't bear that out. We know he struggled when, you know, in some elimination games against the Pittsburgh Penguins most recently, but now that he's made it to the Cup final, now that he's potentially four wins away from hoisting the Cup, can we put that narrative to bed once and for all?
Well, I don't know why the narrative ever existed. Mm-hmm. It's not something I ever believed in, and to be honest, I hear people talking about putting the narrative to bed 100 times more than I hear people talking about the narrative. So, you know, I know this existed to a point, you know, years ago, and I still didn't agree with it then. I certainly don't agree with it now. You talk about Ovechkin's legacy, and does he have to win? Does he have to get to a conference final? Does he have to get to a Cup final? Does he have to win a Cup to cement his legacy? He is one of the greatest players to ever play the game if he retired tomorrow. And nobody, you know, and then there's going to be whatever else he accomplishes. Maybe he wins a Cup, maybe he doesn't. A lot of great players have won a Cup. You know, you can argue hockey is the biggest team sport of any sport. Mm-hmm. So to measure a player on if he wins the Stanley Cup, I think is kind of crazy. And Ovechkin, what is he? He's basically a point-a-game guy in the playoffs in his career. But I just, you know, I know this narrative existed for a little while. And like I said, for me personally, it was never something that I agreed with. And I hear people talking more about putting it to bed now, like I mentioned, than I hear people even talking about it. So I think it's just one of those things that's just circling, you know, kind of with a lot of media. But I don't think there's a lot of substance to it. And to me, it doesn't matter what Ovechkin does at this point. His legacy is cemented. He's one of the best players to ever play the game.
Mike Kelly covers the NHL for TSN and the NHL Network. Mike, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us.
All right, pleasure. Take care.
Take care, Mike. When we come back, we discuss Paul Stastny. What could he be potentially looking for in a new contract? And will the Jets be able to afford that in their salary cap structure? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.